The Waddle and Sylvie podcast is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook app.
Use promo code WMVP.
Tune in every Friday for the official Waddle and Sylvie same game parlay on the DraftKings Sportsbook app.
21 years or older, Illinois only. Eligibility and terms at DraftKings.com/football terms.
This hour is brought to you by NJ Diet. NJ Diet contractually guarantees that you'll lose 20 to 40 plus pounds in only 40 days. Go to NJDiet.com or call them at 855-NJ-DIET.
Live from the Old National Bank State Street Studio.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
WMVP, WSHE HD2, Chicago.
Chicago's home for sports.
A Good Karma Brands radio station.
We're out at Cork and Kerry at the park, right in the shadows of Guaranteed Rate Field. It's all for the Walk is One charity event. Cap will be checking in, finishing up the walk shortly, raising money for Bernie's Book Bank, which is an outstanding cause. Books to underprivileged kids, and you can help as well. Here's what you text, and you'll get the link up right to your phone. Just text ESPN 4 books, the number 4. ESPN, the number 4 books, all is one, to 44321. Easy to remember, right? 44321. And then you'll get the link, and then you'll be able to donate $5, $2, $10. Could be like Mo in Frankfurt, who just donated $100. Whatever you can afford. We know times are tough. And Bernie's Book Bank is trying to help a lot of those people as well. So whatever you can do, that would be fantastic. Also, we have Would You Rather today. So send us Would You Rather. We'll give someone a pizza from Lou Malnati's. Today's all about Cap then. It's where Mindy works. And send us the Would You Rather entries to Meller and Tyler. Hashtag it WS Would You Rather. WS Would You Rather. And send us your best either-or question. We'll read them before we leave at 6:30. And then we'll award one person a gift card to Lou Malnati's.
A little bonus pizza. Waddle and Sylvie today. On till 6:30?
We are on till 6:30, right up into the pregame show. Who's got pregame today?
Is it Tyler?
No, it is Jesse Rogers today.
Jesse!
And because,
hey, everybody, welcome to White Sox baseball!
Connor's back on television. Yeah. He did a great job yesterday. I told him earlier, he's fantastic with his radio play-by-play. You know how I feel about Benetti, too. And, you know, him and Benetti together, that was magic last night, even though it was a bad game. So I want to bring in Dan Durkin. He joins us each and every Thursday. He's going to educate you. Waddle also will compare
you
notes.
Call it nerd notes is what you called it?
Bears nerd notes, right. I mean, yeah, it's like a...
That's fair. I'm not offended by it.
It's a nerd
pretty,
off here on who's all 22 had the better review.
My guess is Dan and I saw the same stuff.
You did, but everyone's interpretation of the same stuff is different. Right, Dan?
Could be, but I think there's some pretty easy conclusions that you can draw from this game on both sides of the ball.
What were those conclusions for you?
For me, I think that obviously the offense's productivity on first down was definitely a huge contributor. 21 first downs the Bears had in the game. 7 went for 0 or negative yardage. 10 went for 2 or fewer. So what's the consequence of that? Typically playing behind the sticks on third down, this offense isn't good enough when they have to go 10 yards, let alone more than 10 yards. That was one of the biggest things that I noted.
Dan, don't they also lead the league in three and outs, don't they, I think, at this point?
They had, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 three and outs by my count in this past game. So if they aren't at the top, they need to be very close to that list. Just not sustaining drives. And, I think it's testament to what I was going to say is the pass protection and just the passing game in general does not look coordinated. I think that the pass protection is not holding up long enough for deeper routes. But Fields' indecisiveness is not helping. I think that he is not processing information fast enough. He's getting stuck on his initial read. And what's the drawback to that is they're not taking enough chances. He's not getting to his checkdowns quick enough. And so they're leaving yards out there. When your offense is already uncoordinated in many ways, that's a huge contributing factor. I think he needs to learn what's not open earlier and get off of that. I think that that's one of his biggest problems right now. Cole Kmet's a non-factor. Darnell Mooney's a non-factor. And there just seems to be a lack of trust between the coaches in this passing game, because if you're in games like you were this past weekend where you're going to be asked to throw the ball late and you've only thrown, I think they feel like eight passes by the time the halftime came around, it's just not enough. Now all of a sudden you're saying, hey, all those plays we didn't call in the first half, now make them in a crunch time situation when we're down by two scores. So I think that there was a lot that went wrong, you know, offensively. And then we can get to the defense later, but I'm sure you guys want to talk about the offense a little bit first.
Yeah, Dan Durkin joining us. It's Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. He joins us each and every Thursday for some of the Bears film breakdown. I told Waddle this off the air, then we brought it to the air last week on how when I saw you in person, you were over the top with your praise with Justin Fields. You think he's going to be a star. Did last week's effort against Green Bay shake your confidence at all?
No, not at all. I mean, it's, guys, I think that we need to, again, zoom out. I always talk about, you know, everything is future facing with this team. Did either of you anticipate the Bears being 1-1 at this point in the season when you looked at the schedule from the beginning, playing against the San Francisco 49ers and Green Bay Packers?
I had them at 0-2. I had them playing a closer game against San Francisco but losing, and I had them losing to the Packers.
Yeah, me too.
Right. Okay. So they're 1-1 right now. Did we before the season agree that there was not the right complement of weapons around him and some questions along the offensive line?
Yes. We knew going in that this was not going to be one of the more dangerous offensive huddles in football.
Exactly. So I think that we just need to keep perspective. And I put something out there kind of just being cheeky on Twitter. I'm like, you know what? You know, Josh Allen is just so magical to watch. But I remember very distinctly when he first came into the league, people were like, this guy's a bust, this guy's a bomb, like all those types of things. So I started comparing him against Justin. Their numbers look very similar, guys. And what I thought was really interesting is when you look at, I did something at the end of it, who was their first touchdown pass to for Josh Allen, it was Kelvin Benjamin. And for Justin Fields, it was Jesper Horsted. Who was Josh Allen's most recent touchdown recipient? Stephon Diggs. How about Justin Fields? Equanimeous St. Brown. The talent's not there around him. So I think that we just need to keep perspective. There is so much that's ahead of this team. I think Luke Getsy is learning how to become an offensive coordinator as Justin Fields learns how to become a quarterback in the league. But the biggest concerns that I have right now is processing. I think that that's the part that I was concerned about heading into the season, and it remains a problem right now. So they need to set up easier passes for him earlier in the game to get him into some sort of a rhythm. And I'm not sure what the battery of plays that they run to get him into that rhythm is going to be, but Luke Getsy needs to find that very quickly, because it's clear to me if he's not in a groove early on, he kind of spirals from there.
Yeah, as Sylvie calls them, nerd notes. You and I are on the same page there.
It's I was going to go nerd notes.
I said to Sylvie after watching it, I said, look, my conclusion is a lot. I came to a lot of the same conclusions. I think you can't, and I'm not suggesting you're doing this, Dan, because you're not. You're pointing it out. I think to be dismissive of where Justin isn't doing what he needs to do, I think would be burying your head in the sand. Not you. I'm saying Bears fans. It doesn't mean that he can't learn to process things quicker and that he won't improve, but right now we can't just lay the blame at the feet of everyone else when he is also making mistakes. But the thing I was really wanted to kind of, you know, jump on the bandwagon with you with was the concept of giving him some confidence early in the game. It's the first thing I said to Sylvie after, you know, discussing all of the other intricate stuff was give him a couple of layups early, like a quick 5-yard out or maybe a slant or just something to give him just some mental reassurance that this is okay and everything's going to be all right. I think that goes a long way with young quarterbacks.
I completely agree. So find a concept. You know, with Mitch, it was the spot route. So a spot route is just a triangular read on one half of the field. The one thing I did like about Matt Nagy, he found ways to run that particular play from different alignments, from different formations, from different personnel groupings. Find one passing route combination that works against, that has an answer to both man and zone. Give Justin one half of the field to read and find different ways to dress up that particular concept and run it over and over and over again. Just, you know, show it from different formations, show it from different personnel groupings, let him get into a groove and let him start feeling a little bit better about where his eyes are on the field. Because I think the biggest problem that I have when I watch him is, like, I'll often, like, right in there, ball should be out, you know, and the ball is not out, and he's stuck. And so now, instead of just waiting and calming his feet, he's immediately climbing the pocket, or he's getting out of the pocket when he doesn't need to. So he needs to erase that, like I talked about from the beginning. When my first read isn't open, you should probably be at that conclusion by, like, the third of your fifth step back in your drop. You don't have to be at the top of your drop to figure that out. So it's like, once the ball snapped, you're immediately reading your first read. You should know by the time you hit the top, one's not there, I got to go to two. And, you know, maybe I'm already on to three at that point in time. So when you compare the Bears offense and how they run it and how they call it to the Packers, there's a lot of similarity into the scheme and to the concepts. There was so much play action that Matt LaFleur used, and they had that running game going, but, like, Aaron Rodgers doesn't need play action to be an incredible quarterback, yet Matt LaFleur uses it all the time to benefit him. So I think now at this point in time, the Bears have put enough on tape to show the league that they are a run-first team. Run play action on first down. There's nothing statistically. I've talked to you guys about this in the past. The data doesn't say you have to have your running game going in order to hit a play action play. It doesn't. That's just not the case. So start making that the foundation of your passing offense and give him some cheapies from the beginning to get him going. I think that's a big step that Getsy needs to take as a play caller, because right now he just looks very stuck, and he just looks, once his first is gone, he really doesn't know where to go to next. So that, to me, is the biggest concern, because you're teaching him how to be a good processor of football at the highest level of competition.
Dan, I agree with everything you're saying. But when you, like, went through the exercise of, did you think they would be 1-1 at this point? Did you think that this would be the case? Did you think, though, that when the pocket was clean and guys were open, that Fields would just stand in the pocket and not get it to the right spot, whether it's the check down on third and long and it goes to a fourth down? Like, that's the one pass he can't make. There were other guys open, and he had times. We talked about the 49ers throw where he nearly threw the interception in the third quarter to Gibson. Like, aren't those plays that shake you a little bit? It makes me nervous watching those.
Oh, sure. Guys, he's not playing quarterback well right now. There's no other way to put it. I mean, there's no way to sugarcoat this. That doesn't mean he can't be. But, I mean, the longer you see this inability to get past your primary read and then settle your feet and reset where you need to go and don't get nervous, you know, like, dig your cleats into the ground and find the next guy, because I guarantee you there is somebody in that progression that's going to be open. And that's the part that I was concerned about when I went through this, was there were guys open in that game. You know, there really were. The one where he climbed out of the pocket and he threw the ball from 3 yards past the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
As soon as he got out of the pocket, Equanimeous St. Brown was wide open over the middle of the field. He didn't need to wait for, you know, like, four steps to throw it. He should have thrown it immediately. He has all the arm strength to get that done. So it's those types of things that are concerning. There was an out and up earlier in the game where St. Brown beat 21 for the Packers on, like, what they call, some people call it a chair route, whatever it is, on the sideline. Ball has to be out. And we were talking about that last week. NFL open is quick. You need to rip the ball when it's there, and he's not doing that. So this is the part that I wanted to talk to you guys about. I am not sure if the hits principle also applies to the offense, where they have him so programmed and concerned about turning the ball over that what made him great in college, which was his, like, big game hunter mentality, has been taken away from him. But that's something that's created, like, dissonance in my head. I'm like, man, why is he so hesitant to throw these balls? These are plays that he ripped in the past. So that's the one part that's not settled quite in my head. I don't know if this is a coaching thing or if this is a hesitant thing for Justin. Most likely it's a combination of both.
Yeah, it's something that we talked a bit about couple days ago, and I'm latched onto this as well, Dan. Look, you, especially in today's game, and you can find several examples. Like, do you think Patrick Mahomes cares if he throws a pick? Do you think, you know, Matthew Stafford, they care, but they don't dwell on it, and the offense can't dwell on it. They've got to be pumping into Justin's head that it's okay to make a mistake, but do it being aggressive. And I think that you're right. I think that that it's almost, I don't know if it's what they're coaching him or it's just coming from inside, that he's trying to be so careful with the football, he's missing out on opportunities when most of the people around him would tell you, hey, listen, make a mistake, but make it aggressively.
Correct. And so, like, that's the whole part where we talk about he's thinking and not reacting. It's yeah. still not natural for him to play NFL quarterback yet. And so, like, you need to instill in him to exactly your point. When it's there, you have to take it. Think about the Steelers game last year when he just top of the drop. Yeah. Hey, it's a tight window, and I'm just going to rip this ball up to seam to Cole Kmet, and something great's going to happen from it. You have to do that. And so, like, those are the types of things where he needs to break that concern from his thinking in certain situations. And then, you know, the coaches are going to be like, hey, you know, that's okay. You know, like, in this situation, it's okay. But I do really think that he's almost been programmed in some ways. Like, we can't afford to turn the ball over because it's this big mantra from Eberflus. And I'm not saying it's the wrong mantra, but I'm wondering if it's rubbing off on him in a detrimental way.
I know there's other offensive things to get to, and I think Sylvie's got some thoughts on that. But quickly, I watched Roquan Smith, and to me, he looked like a player who isn't comfortable with the defense they're asking him to play. He was no factor at all from my perspective. What did you see?
He was good in the first maybe drive to drive and a half of the game, but you know, he was not great at getting off blocks later in that game. I think the entire defense was gassed in the second half of that game because they were on the field so long. But one of the things that I did notice from an adjustment perspective that the Packers made is they used the Bears' gap shooting aggressiveness against them. And so it's one thing to be quick through your gap, but you know what you're doing? You're creating a hole for the running back when you're doing that. When you're just barreling through, let's say you have the A gap or the B gap with your head down, they're going to wait, and then they're going to run to the spot that you vacated. So you may think that you're in your gap. You've effectively created a new one, and the one that's not covered by somebody. And so I think that they used that against Muhammad. They definitely used it against Blackson. They used it against Jones. The Packers' offensive line was just really well orchestrated by the second half of that game to say, hey, let them quick penetrate up the field. They ran a lot of those gap schemes. They ran one back power. They ran a couple toss plays. And so they used the Bears' over-aggressiveness and penetration against them. And then to your point, Tom, the second level tackling was really shoddy in that game. You know, when you think about, you know, whether it was a safety filling or whether it was a linebacker not being able to get off a block. So it was just really easy for the Packers to get to the second level. But Matt LaFleur is a really good coach. And, you know, I think that the adjustments that they made on offense in the second half were just so crucial to use the Bears and what they do against them. So I think that this is a big learning opportunity for Eberflus to think about, hey, my philosophies and the things that I'm doing here, yeah, I'm teaching these guys to go really fast on each snap and to get through and, you know, penetrate the field, you know, as quickly as you can, but there's a consequence to that. So when you see the other team adjusting, read and react. Get your eyes up. Find out when you get through the gap, where's the ball? And I think that the Bears front four had a really tough time locating the ball. On the flip side, they were great from a pass rush perspective. So it was a really interesting game for me to see them put so much pressure with just four up front against Rodgers, which is something that they really have struggled to do in the past.
Dan Durkin joining us. Follow him on Twitter. It's at DJ Durkin. Also, his YouTube channel is the All 22 Review. I got two offensive questions, as Waddle alluded to. You mentioned Cole Kmet and Darnell Mooney as non-factors. Is that on them? Is that on Getsy? Is that on Fields?
For Kmet, I think it's definitely on him. I mean, the first down play where he hits you right in your numbers, like, you have to catch that ball. So, you know, he's not doing enough for his quarterback in that instance. And I think when you're asked to be that Y inline blocker, you need to be good at it. So he had a really tough time with Preston Smith in that game. And then when the Bears did try and get Mooney going, they ran that orbit motion to where he came across the field, goes behind field, and then they have the exact matchup that they want. Cole Kmet in the slot against Darnell Savage. So about a 60-pound advantage against that guy, and he completely whiffs on the one block that could have sprung that play. It's that type of stuff that just shows me, like, it's the lack of suddenness. It's the lack of short area quickness to where smaller players are just able to get around him. And he had another block late in the game where if he seals Preston Smith, Herbert walks into the end zone. So I'm struggling to think about why it's been so hard for him to contribute as a blocker. But as a pass receiver, when you do get opportunities, granted the first opportunity he got in the season skipped to his right, but you have to catch the ball to gain that trust. So I'd say a lot of this is on Cole Kmet right now. As far as Darnell Mooney, one of the big bigger things I had for Getsy is he needs to take more shots. And you think about what the Packers do. Once the Packers get to like the 40-yard line on either side, they're looking for that big. You guys have seen Rodgers do this for the longest time, and Favre before him. They'll do that long outside zone stretch and then boot him naked back to the opposite side, and then they've got a deep crosser going over the middle of the field. The Bears tried that once with Mooney. They should be trying that play like four times a game. You can't bring it down to one moment where we might be able to connect. And this comes back to the point earlier in the call. You need to be taking more of these chances earlier in the game rather than just saying we're relying on this one moment for it to connect. So I do put it on Getsy to think about better ways to be a little bit more aggressive down the field earlier in the game.
And then my other offensive question involves Lucas Patrick. I think we've all liked what we've seen from Jenkins in a lot of spots. Him and Patrick keep on rotating. Is that just to get Lucas Patrick up to speed with no camp and no preseason? Because when he's ready to snap the ball, he's just going to slide right into center?
It has to be because, I'm sure Tom probably saw this as well. Kenny Clark absolutely dominated that goal line series where it came down to the review where, Fields needed to try and break the plane. From my perspective, you need to get Patrick in there at center and Mustafer off the field. Kenny Clark really handled him at the anchor, the pivot point there in the middle. So I think that the best five is now going to be Patrick there at center. And then, I really like what I'm seeing Tevin at right guard. So I think right now it is trying to get his leg under him as he gets his hand right. But from my perspective, it's very clear they need to get Mustafer off the field and Patrick in as soon as possible.
It's hard to play offensive tackle in this league because you're trying to keep monsters off of your quarterback, especially when you're young and somewhat inexperienced. When you watch Borum and you watch Braxton Jones, how concerned are you with the lack of consistent positive play?
Yeah, Borum is definitely a better run blocker than he is a pass blocker at this point in his career. So I worry about where he is at. It's very clear to me just how acute the need is at offensive tackle. Jones missed a few in the first game, but I thought he battled relatively well in the second half of the game against the 49ers. Can't say the same for this. There was just far too much pressure and far too much duress that Fields was under in the limited amount of times that they actually dropped back and passed the ball. So tackle is a bit of a concern right now for me, but if you can get that middle fortified to where he can step up, I think that that's going to be a big benefit because there are a couple clips, Tom, and I'm sure you saw them, where Kenny Clark was just one. He had a hump move against Sam Mustafer.
Yeah, he's a monster.
Put him on his side. Yeah. My goodness. And so, you just need to get a little bit more sturdy up the middle because nothing affects a quarterback more than pressure up the middle. At least if it starts to bend around the sides, he can step up into a cleaner pocket ahead of him. That was not the case against the Packers. They were getting – it was almost like an M-shaped pocket a lot to where it's like the pressure's coming from the outside, but it's also coming straight up the middle. So I think that they're going to be so much better off once Patrick can get back to center.
Great work. We appreciate it, Dan. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
Guys, have a great night.
There you go. Dan Durkin, follow him.
Nerd
notes. TJ Durkin. We are live at Cork and Carry on the Park. I want to react to that, and we haven't played Luke Getsy. I want to get some Luke Getsy. We'll tell you how you could also donate to Caps Walk as One with Bernie's Book Bank. It's all coming up next.
Today is the day for the third annual Walk as One Chicago. While Cap walks 24 miles, you can help raise funds for Bernie's Book Bank. Text ESPN4Books to 44321 to make a donation. A $20 donation will provide 20 quality books to underserved children. That's ESPN, the number 4, books to 44321.
Waddle, can you tell us about the Power Hour?
It is the Power Hour right now. Savills will match any gift made throughout the course of the entire show. So we're going to be on the air until 6:30. So through 6:30, and they will donate up to $25,000 to benefit Bernie's Book Bank. They will match that. Savills is the integrated commercial real estate advisory firm with 600 offices globally. They bring people together, services and technology, all of that together to cut through the complexity of today's markets, helping clients unlock hidden value and drive results for their business. Your gift doubled by Savills Match. That means 3,125 children will, in fact, receive a bag of 8 books each due to your all's generosity. And again, I think as you tweeted it out and I retweeted it, you could text ESPN4Books.
All is one word.
To 44321, and then you can
You'll get
donate.
The link, and then it's a really easy donation page. So I think there's an Apple Pay link there too.
Yep.
So just it's like a couple clicks of a button. It's the books that go miles and miles. And let the record show too that Mo from Frankfurt donated a second $100
yes,
bill.
He did.
That's $200.
Two Stoichkis.
Yes.
And way to go, Mo.
Come on out to Cork and Kerry at the park. That's where we're at, right in the shadows of Guaranteed Rate Field. Luke Getsy spoke today, and there's a lot of talk about the offense, Meller. What was the biggest thing, in your opinion? I want to, because we have not heard it yet, and I want to listen together. But what do you think the biggest takeaway was, or what the biggest soundbite we should listen to is?
So there's a few things. A lot of people, I think, are making note about how the Bears threw the ball. Not enough, correct, especially considering they were trailing. So Getsy was asked directly, why so few pass attempts in this game?
I mean, we only had 42 plays, called 19 or 20 passes. So that was pretty spot on to where how we wanted to play that game. I think what it was the total attempts a little while ago, was it 11 or 12 total attempts? Yeah, but like his touchdown was a pass play that he took and made something happen. The play right before the fourth and one was a pass play that he took and ran, you know. So I think it's part of it that I know that, you know, it's the NFL. Everyone's throwing it 30, 40 times a game, but we only had 42 snaps. And when you run the ball the way that we did, I think you have to make sure you're running the ball too. So that's part of it. And it's our job, you know, as each week as we evaluate the opponent, what gives us the best chance to succeed, and where are our matchups favorable to us. And obviously last week we felt like, you know, there was parts of the run game that we felt like we had a pretty good matchup, and we were able to get seven explosives. That's a lot of explosives in the run game.
You buy it?
A part of it, yeah, but at the end of the day, I mean, look, you're going to have to throw the ball more than, even if it's a 50-50 split. Most teams are significantly, you know, more leaning on passing than running the ball. I get what he's trying to do, but if they're still doing this 4 weeks from now, there's going to be some issues, I think.
And then this is part of the three and out comps that you're talking about. Like when you have four three and outs, like he said, that is, you know, right there, 12 plays. And when you're talking about only running 40 offensive plays in a game, that's where you just got to be better overall. Offense, you control how many plays you can possibly run by extending drives, by picking up first downs, you know?
Yeah. No, listen,
it all goes together.
It does. I've been an advocate of them, you know, let's do this. If you feel like you need to be a little more conservative than most or off the bat, yes, but it seemed like they were trying to be overly protective on Sunday night. At some point, again, you've got to take the training wheels off and let this offense kind of run on its own.
I think Carmen hit this too, that if you look at Lovie's defense, they haven't given up a ton of points, but they've given up a lot of yards, and we know Lovie. Lovie likes the bend but don't break. Lovie loves to dare you to go 12 plays without making a mistake before his defense takes the ball away. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see if the Bears can take advantage and not just rack up some yards, but rack up some points. It's a team very similar to their level. Meller, what else did Luke Getsy, the Bears offensive coordinator, have to say?
So based on what you guys just said there, I think this segues nicely, because he was asked, are you comfortable allowing Justin Fields to throw the ball 30 or 40 times if it comes to that?
Yeah, I mean, whatever the defense presents to us, that's what we got to be able to do. And I believe we can do that. So each week, different personalities on defensive coordinators present different things, right? Last week, I was around it for a long time. They build that shell and they don't let you get behind them, right? We were able to get behind them, and that's where we got to take advantage of those couple of opportunities that we did have. We didn't execute in those situations and take advantage of those certain opportunities. When you play those types of styles of defenses, like, you're not getting many shots, so you better hit it when you can. And we didn't do that, so we got to do a better job of that.
It's a really good point, because there's a different conversation being had if a couple of those plays are made. There really are. And I think that
if we would have just hit those two plays.
Well, what happens is if you start to hit those plays, guess what?
I know.
He's more inclined to call them again. He's more inclined to open some things up. But when he senses that his quarterback isn't seeing things the right way and he's not hitting those open plays, what is human nature? Well, we're going to do something that is, you know, asking him less, and something that we're actually doing pretty well, and that's continue to run the football.
Well, and right. here you go. You're asking, so what happens if you hit a play like that? That was the question. What happened on the deep ball to Darnell Mooney that you guys did not connect on?
Mooney didn't have great detail with the route. Where the landmark where you're trying to hit that thing was way off to where from where he was. Justin could have helped him by throwing him over to that point. So that part of it, you know, the two of them, you know, just not executing that necessarily at the highest level right there. But something that, you know, we took it, we learned from it, we studied it a bunch this week and make sure everyone's on the same page, not just Mooney, but for whoever else might be in that situation the next time.
That's good stuff right there.
Yeah.
He's telling it. He's not hiding anything.
No, I mean, if you're Luke Getsy too, you're probably a little bit, I'm not going to say defensive, but willing to kind of to defend yourself because, again, there are a lot of stats attached to this team through 2 weeks that, you know, you're 32nd in the league. You're a first-time play caller in the league. You know, this is your opportunity. So I'm assuming, you know, he's willing to give you answers as to why things aren't going as smoothly as they would like.
Attention to detail for Darnell Mooney.
Yeah,
Justin could have helped him out by doing this. They're both at fault here.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're right. There's no more just protecting everybody here at
they
this
shouldn't
point
either.
And so a lot of criticism based on the shotgun 4th-and-1 call,
yeah,
right? Luke Getsy was, you know what? He was ready to take the blame for that. Not even take the blame. He would have done it again.
Well, we love that play. Now we didn't execute it properly. We for whatever reason we kind of saw something. We were seeing a little ghost a little bit up front, so they were able to get penetration where we should have had two linemen on one to stop that penetration, which kind of got Lucas off a little bit instead of cleaning that gap, and then it would have just been Lucas with 59 in the hole, and then Justin, you know, still would have had to run through some contact. But, no, we knew that was our plan. We talked about it all week. We went over every front that they present, and that we had plenty of time. I mean, it was like a stoppage and play for the replay, right? And we're like, we knew what was coming, and that was exactly what we wanted. We just didn't execute it well enough. And, again, we got to get them coached up a little bit better so that they don't make that mistake.
I'm calling all the right plays. They're executing my plays wrong.
Well, at least he's giving you answers, you know? I mean, look, as I said to you the other day, I wouldn't have done it. I mean, I just would have felt more comfortable in a conventional setup. But that play's run by a lot of teams. Like, Josh Allen runs that play quite a bit from shotgun in the red zone. Lamar Jackson runs. I mean, a lot of quarterbacks, they have them in shotgun even at the 1 or 2 yard line these days.
Anything else, Meller? That's some good stuff here from
Getsy.
Yeah,
no, listen, he does give you a lot of info.
I will say that.
So he was asked, look, Justin Fields climbed the pocket well a couple of times but failed to find the open receiver, something that we've heard a lot on this show from both Waddle and Durkin. So this is what Luke Getsy had to say about Justin Fields climbing the pocket but not necessarily getting the best out of it.
We've talked about it in here. The experiences that you have of seeing the defense and slowing the game down is, you know, we can't create that for him other than practicing every day. Like it's a game, and then him getting these experiences. He really only had 2 third downs that I just, you know, wish that he would have. Other than that, I thought he did a pretty nice job most of the night. But those come with the experience, and so I'm looking forward to seeing how he gets it to do it this weekend.
And the way you get experience is not just through practice. You have to do it in a game. So he's going to learn if, in fact, you allow him the opportunity to have those same moments again and more frequently. That's where I'm saying to you, look, I don't need them to throw it 40 times a game. But I also want them to run it, give them a few more weeks, and at that point, run the offense as you would run it, not trying to protect anybody. Because you're going to have to evaluate these guys. And as he said, the only way Justin is going to get the experience in those moments is to see those moments live in a game. And if you prevent him from even experiencing those moments because you're trying to protect him in the offense in other ways, how do you ever make that progress?
Yeah, really good.
It's a conundrum.
You know what, let me give you one last bite,
sure.
Sylvie, because I think this was kind of the theme if you listen to the entire press conference. He was asked, okay, these first two games, are they indicative of who you are as a play caller? And you'll listen. I think this is his philosophy.
I truly believe in evaluating the matchups each week and saying, okay, here's where we have the advantages, here's where our disadvantages are. You have to look at the opponent and say, okay, here's where you have to take advantage of them, here's where you have to stay away from. And so I think that, to me, that's what I want to be. Whatever that means, I don't know what that means. If it's 50 throws, 50 runs. I don't really care. You know, it's about winning. It's about giving us the best chance to win. And, you know, like I said, usually the style of defense will dictate that.
Problem with that is, from my perspective, and again, I like his candid nature of answering all these questions, is you're not going to, a lot of these defense, you're not going to have the edge because you have lesser personnel.
Right.
So you're going to find yourself with a, you know, with a butter knife and a gunfight.
Well, that's why maybe he's dictating what he does more on the opponent.
Could be.
Because he's trying to expose their weakness because they know they're not more talented than them.
Yeah, and
does
it's
that make
be,
more,
it,
I mean,
it does, but it's going to be a learning process for him as well. But at some point, you're also, listen, the best designed play against a defense that you think you can get the best of sometimes doesn't work because of human error.
Right.
And vice versa. Sometimes a defense has got a look that makes you itchy and scratchy, but your guys go out and execute a play because you're giving them an opportunity, and they get the best of a defense that maybe had a little bit of an advantage on you look-wise, but how do you know unless you try?
These are all big games for development, but I'm really interested to see how this team responds.
I agree.
Especially against, this is like the matchup.
Look, again,
this is the team they match up very evenly with. They're very similar. And after a monsoon and after a really tough nationally televised road game, let's see now, with all things being equal, how you look.
Exactly. And that's why everything that I've said that has been somewhat critical is always prefaced with, look, this team found themselves in a couple of difficult matchups for the reason you mentioned. Monsoon, and the 49ers are an excellent defense. The Green Bay Packers, excellent defense. This is where you get an opportunity to measure yourself against an opponent that probably is more in your talent class.
68 and partly sunny. That's what the app is saying right now. Yeah, there you go. All right, coming up next, Would You Rather. Get last chance right now to get in your Would You Rathers to win some Lou Malnati's. Hashtag it WS Would You Rather. Send it to Tyler Aki and Jeff Meller. We'll read you some of them. And then Michael Wilbon will join us at 5. What a day outside it is today. Swing those windows open. Let the cool breeze in. And now I can do that because my windows work the way they're supposed to work. Thanks to my great friends and partners at Window Nation. For 3 years, I debated, should we get custom-made windows? Who do we work with? My wife and I navigated this thing, and then we found Window Nation because they're A-plus rated from the Better Business Bureau, because 97% approval rating online. Google their name, Window Nation, and you'll see all the great reviews. Now when I open and close my windows, they work the way they're supposed to work. This summer, my energy bills were down. The AC bills were lower because the heat wasn't coming in. And this winter, I'm going to save money on my gas bill as well. Go to Window Nation right now. You'll get half off. That's right. It's halftime, the halftime sale. You buy two windows, get two free with no limit. Buy four, get four free. And you'll make no payment of any kind till 2025. They're going to save you money in the short term. They're going to save you money in the long term. Window Nation, 866-90-NATION, 866-90-NATION. Go to windownation.com. Call my guy, Alan Favada, their sales manager. He's going to hook you up, 866-90-NATION or windownation.com.
Hey, this is Coach Mike Ditka.
Greg Olson here.
This is Stacey King.
Hey, this is D. Rose.
What up? This is Ludacris.
Hello, this is Dick Enberg. Would you like to play a little? Would you rather? Oh, my.
Usually on Tuesday, we pushed it back because we were out at Jewel. And this is brought to you by Lou Malnati's. So the winner will get a gift card to Lou Malnati's. Hashtag it WS Would You Rather. Send us your best either-or questions. We'll read a few now, and we're on till 6:30. If we get some more, we could sprinkle them in throughout the show. Tyler, Jeff, what do we have?
All right, Rick wants to know, would you rather be a high school kid that is chipped, a.k.a. a tracking device, and get an extra $50 weekly allowance, or not chipped and a regular allowance?
I wouldn't mind. I've thought about this a while since we discussed this about an hour or so ago. I wouldn't really mind if I was chipped as a kid. Like, what's the difference?
Well, but are you telling me that you're chipped and there are no health issues for being chipped? Like, 10 years later, you're not going to find out that being chipped now.
I think, let's assume that.
Let's assume that.
It's more of a money thing here.
Yeah, then chip me. Because I wasn't going. Like, this is my philosophy about Alexa listening to me right now. I got nothing to hide.
Everyone in my family can track me via my phone. I don't care.
Like, I was either at, like, the Morton Grove Theater seeing, like, a cheap movie.
Right.
I was over at Burger's house playing poker or something.
Or looking at Playboys, which is fine.
Well, that was in my house, though. The door was locked for that.
Really?
Yeah, the bathroom. Usually the basement bathroom.
better there than in the woods. All right, boys. Would you rather be the White Sox or the Cubs entering the 2023 offseason?
Ooh, that's a good one.
It's a good one. I'm still going White Sox. I believe in what the Cubs are doing. They still have a long way to go. I still believe this team has a lot of talent.
Okay, let me ask you the question, Miller. Am I a member of the team, or am I, or I'm a fan, or what am I when you say, would you rather be?
I feel like, how about overseeing the team? Who's in better position going forward?
So would you rather be Jed or Rick?
Yes, that's how I
both of you have constraints on you.
Yes, knowing that.
Wow. I still think the better team is the White Sox. I'm optimistic on the Cubs. I've told you guys this. And, they've got Tyler and I were talking off the air. They've got two players in Canario and Mervis who have hit over 30 home runs in AAA. Brennan Davis is healthy. P. Crow Armstrong, he's lower level, but he seems like he's really going to be a good player. South Bend just won their division. I like what they've got, but I still think the White Sox have primetime players where if they make the right moves, they should be back in contention.
Right, but where's your level of expect? That's where, to me, the answer lies. Where's your level of expectation with regard to being able to make the moves that will take you where you need to go? The Cubs have done it, not recently.
Right.
But there has been a willingness to give what is needed
with Theo.
To go there.
Where's Theo?
That's true. He's not there any longer, but...
You've heard of Mantle and Maris? Well, look out for Canario and Mervis.
Hey, and they're going to sign Trey Turner or somebody.
Sure,
Bogarts.
Sure they are.
They're going to win as many playoff games this year as the team that we're just a few
true.
Feet away
that's
from.
You,
how
about
a bat? You get your Dansby Swanson jersey ready there, Sylvie.
Oh, okay, fine. So maybe you're not willing to bet me. I bet you they get one of the big four shortstops. Correa, Swanson, Trey Turner, and who's the fourth?
Bogarts.
And Bogarts. I mentioned Bogarts.
I think Turner and Bogarts and Correa are in a different class than Swanson personally.
Okay.
I agree with that.
Would you guys rather walk 23 miles with Cap or work as stadium security for the A's at Oakland Coliseum?
Oh, for sure the A's.
That's the easiest thing.
Like,
you don't have anything to do.
There's no one there. So what? You have to tell people, hey, get that out of your mouth. Let's go.
What?
Watch some baseball.
What?
I'm telling you what the stadium security is doing. It's very, very low, easy work. I'm not walking 23 miles.
Out of your mouth.
Where did you purchase that hot dog, miss?
You seen what goes on there?
I didn't see that.
Is that your go-to line when you walk in on two people? Hey, get that out of your mouth.
Where did you get that Frankfurter from? We don't sell those here.
I thought you were going to say something to the effect of, hey, none of that. Knock that off. Hey, get that out of your mouth.
Yes. This is a ballpark.
You went nuclear.
Not a brothel. What are you doing?
No Dodger dogs allowed at A's Stadium.
And you're definitely not getting out of your seat to tell them to stop. You're just going to sit back with your feet up.
Like, think about this, Waddle. You said yesterday you can't even walk 23 miles,
which I don't believe. I don't think I could.
And all that time with Cap. And then you got sweaty Braggs there bragging about everything he does these days. Braggs is bragging. I got a bad meniscus and I'm still walking. Look at me. Those two, it's got to be a take that fest.
Oh, yeah. There's no question.
I am for sure working stadium security. Get that out of your mouth. All right, we'll read some more later. That's good. Keep them coming.
That's the oddest response. I don't think I would have ever. I don't think I would have ever. If you gave me 10 choices, I don't think I would have ever gotten that one.
Hashtag it, WS, would you rather? Michael Wilbon joins us next. He owes me something. Will he give it to me? Coming up next.